You are listening to Faithless Brewing, a Magic the Gathering podcast for the rogue deck builder. Each week, we design new decks in Modern and Pioneer. We put our creations to the test and share our findings on the air. Today, we continue our tour of the gods of Kaldheim with the granddaddy of them all, Alrun, God of the Cosmos, and Haka, Whispering Raven. Yes, you can bolt the bird, but what happens if you blink it? We've got four new deck lists that put Alrun to the test. That's all coming up on today's brew session. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Faithless Brewing Podcast. I am David Robertson, joined by my co-host Damon Alexander.
Hey, what's up?
Not too much. And the CEO, Cave Dan. Daniel, what's going on?
Good to be here. This is the best time of year. Start of a new brewing season.
Absolutely. So this is Kaldheim Brew Session number 2. We are looking at the blue god, Alrun, God of the Cosmos. But he's gone with a little friend, Haka, Whispering Raven. Just a quick reminder to everyone, Alrun, God of the Cosmos, 3 blue-blue for a 1-1. So you're getting paid off right away. Alrun gets a +1/+1 for each card in your hand and each foretold card you own in exile. At the beginning of your end step, choose a card type. Then reveal the top 2 cards of your library, put all cards of the chosen type into your hand, and the rest on the bottom of your library in any order. And then the backside is Haka, Whispering Raven, 1 and a blue for a 2/3 flying bird, legendary. Whenever Haka, Whispering Raven deals combat damage to a player, return it to its owner's hand, then scry 2. So Damon, break down some of the more complicated rules that are involved with the Alrun God of the Cosmos, Haka, Whispering Raven combination.
Yeah, fortunately we get to dodge most of the complexity coming from Valky. But a few notes. So first off is that the end step trigger on Alrun doesn't really work if you flicker the card. It has to be in play at the beginning of your end step to go on the stack. So any sort of flicker that comes back at the beginning of your end step, it will be too late. Another comment is that Alrun has already received clarifying errata to read, put all cards of the chosen type revealed this way into your hand. So for those of you thinking that you name artifact and get to take every Black Lotus in the world into your hand, that is not the case.
It's a silver bordered Alrun. Just collects them all to himself.
Truly a god. Also, when it comes to the card types, well, what are card types? In this case, to be clear, these are the kind of Tarmogoyf counting types, which includes cards like, instant sorcery, tribal, but not like super types like snow or legendary, or basic, non-basic, etc. Choosing is also part of the resolution of the ability. You put it on the stack, and then as it resolves, you make your choice. So, for example, you can respond to the trigger with Omen of the Sea or whatever, stack your library, and then make your choice. The end step trigger is not optional, and putting cards in your hand or on the bottom are also not optional. Of course, there's a good chance you can, if you don't want more cards in hand, name a type that isn't present in your deck. But notice that you don't get to stack your deck for the next turn because the top cards of your deck are either going to your hand or the bottom of your library. They are not sticking around.
So just to clarify what you meant about the blink point, you're talking about cards that hide the creature until your end step. So Urien is probably the most famous example of this, but Flicker Wisp as well.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's really just no point in using Urien to flicker an Alrun. Maybe you want to flicker a Haka, that's a different question, but probably not Alrun. Moving on to our friendly Raven side of the card, the ability triggers only on damage to players. Just want to reemphasize that not planeswalkers or creatures, so it has to connect with their face. And then secondly, the scry 2 happens regardless of what happens to Haka after the trigger's on the stack. You're going to scry 2.
Yeah, so in terms of how this works as a double phase card, all the same things that we talked about when we talked about Valky and Tybalt still apply, but just the patterns are totally different because the front side is the expensive half. And that's always the default half. The back side is cheap, so that means that you can use things like, playing the cheap side, the Haka Raven side, and then ephemerating it or blink it or some way to get the 5-mana side, because it will always default to coming in as Alrun. the stuff about cascading into Alrend. Well, you probably would never actually cascade into Alrend and then choose to play the Raven instead. I guess you could.
If you had to block a dragon or something, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, so when it comes to assessing this card, we just have like different questions that we have to ask. I think the biggest question mark is Haka Whispering Raven, because you're going to have so many chances to cast Haka. Starting on turn two, and then every turn Haka's in play, you'll have the option to attack with Haka, bounce it to your hand, and you can just replay Haka if you want, if you just want to scry too. Once you play the Alrend side, you're locked into Alrend. You're basically never going to get the Haka side back. So we need to sort of think about, are there play patterns where we actually like what the Raven does for us? Is this Raven a worthwhile card? I know I compared it to Hammerhead Shark, kind of tongue-in-cheek, during our previous episodes.
Yeah, I mean, as I kind of described when I was excited about this card, I do think that the 2-3 body is pretty relevant in Pioneer, especially. It lives through a lot of the common red removal. It is a blocker against aggressive decks. It can be turned into Alrend, you know, whenever you like. There are blink effects that are, you know, reasonably playable along with this card. It's not a Lightning Bolt format. In maybe post-board games, if you're bringing in sweepers, you know, this is a card that forces them to commit more stuff to the board, you know, as they're playing 1-1s and 2-2s, and then you get your pot shot into the face, put it back in your hand, Supreme Verdict, and then next turn you play it as your Alrend.
I do like that it's just like a little pot shot. Insults as bird comes and claws you.
Yeah, it's a weird one. I mean, playing Haka, it's obviously a pretty mana-intensive way to close out a game. But Scry 2 is like about as good as drawing a card, maybe slightly worse in blue decks that just draw a lot of cards in general. It can help at least plink down Teferi's. Yeah, and it's a good blocker in Pioneer.
That line about playing a sweeper after bouncing Haka, kind of interesting because Cosima, God of the Voyage, works a lot of the same way. I mean, Cosima, both halves of Cosima hide from Supreme Verdicts pretty effectively. You know, you can send Cosima on the Voyage on your upkeep if it was a creature, or you can just play the Omen Keel half, maybe crew it with Haka's. What if we consider those as like a pairing? You could potentially get a lot of blockers that just disappear on a whim, save themselves from the doom scar that's coming.
Yeah, I mean, I think that sweepers are not good in Modern and are not very good in Pioneer either. But yeah, I think in Standard, I think that play pattern is going to be very common and very frustrating for aggressive players. I do think the other thing to note is that the most common type in most decks is going to be lands. You know, if you're playing a control deck, you're probably playing, let's say, 25 lands. You probably don't have 25 of any other kind. So it's the case that Alrend is actually just going to keep finding lands for your Cosima. You're never going to have to worry about like missing on those. You're going to get basically three looks, the two cards at your end of turn and your draw step to find another land to either put another counter on it or bring it back into play, you know, with more power and draw cards. So I do think that sort of combination that you're outlining is going to be quite powerful in Standard specifically. And maybe it'll find its way in some permutation into non-rotating formats.
Yeah, after about 16 game actions, you'll finally draw a spell.
It's had to be really fast at clicking.
So much yeah. For Haka. The exciting half of this card is the Alrend. That's the 5-mana big payoff. Big question mark. Payoff. Question mark. Question mark. It's really unclear to me how good Alrend is. Two related questions. Alrend by itself, with no help, just how strong is this end step trigger and what are you supposed to do with it? And B, like, how much are you willing to go out of your way in deck construction to either make Alrend better or to get Alrend into play more quickly? What do you guys think about those questions?
I think if you're having to do something to make your 5-drop better, then you've done something horribly wrong. They imprinted a lot of great 5-drops in the last 3 years that you don't have to do anything other than just tap 5 mana and resolve a permanent for. So I don't think you want to be playing cards that specifically are only good if you've resolved a 5-drop and it hasn't died.
Yeah. The big question to me with Alrend is, you know, is it better than Muldrifter? Not that that's like a, you know, an easy bar to clear. Muldrifter is a great Magic card. I've played it in Modern as recently as several months ago. But they're kind of similar in a lot of ways. They both have a cheaper front half and a more expensive back half that gives you a creature and maybe draw some cards. With Muldrifter, you definitely draw two immediately. With Alrend, you could whiff. Haka's meant to avoid that. You know, it's kind of self-synergistic card. But in general, you could whiff, or maybe, you know, like the best card to draw is a sorcery because you need to draw like your Supreme Verdict, but you have low sorcery density. And so, you know, to draw the most cards, you're better off picking land or instant. And so in that sense, like digging towards cards that are not a common type in your deck is a little bit tricky here.
There are generic cards you can play in your control deck that are very powerful with Alrind. I'm specifically thinking of Jace the Mind Sculptor. I mean, that's functionally zeroing for drawing five a turn. Is that good? I don't know. We'd have to run that a few times and see what absolute power feels like. At the same time, Jace just zeroing a couple times is already probably winning lots of games. You don't need to resolve another five mana sorcery speed threat to do that.
Alrind can help you win if you resolve a Jace, Jace it, untap with it, and have five mana up.
Yeah. I do think that the thing that most excites me about it is playing it in Pioneer and cheating it into play quickly. So to your question, Dan, I think there are cards. I'm thinking of the card Charming Prince. I'm thinking of Flicker of Fate. I'm thinking of Essence Flux. These are all cards that I consider to be like borderline playable in Pioneer, or very playable in Pioneer, depending on the shell. They work very well with the Raven half, which is a lot more relevant in a non-Lightning Bolt format. I think that also putting Alrind into play earlier matters a lot because the body size lines up very well against commonly played removal. Red, you know, is casting Shocks and maybe Wizard's Lightnings. Black is casting Fatal Push, and there is no Path to Exile. So Alrind is, if it gets in play early, it's actually just a fine blocker that's accumulating value. And if you're blinking it in response to that trigger, that first turn, it's almost certainly drawing a card or more, because hopefully you're scrying in such a way that you can predict what the top two cards of your deck will be.
Yeah, the earlier it comes down, typically the more cards you have in hand.
I mean, that's what scares me. I'm thinking like the average size of Alrind on the turn you play it would be like 2/2 or 3/3. That's if I'm just casting it as one of my curve toppers. Now, you're saying you're going to go out of your way to like blink it early, but then we're talking about a five drop that needed help. Unless you're saying you're happy with a Raven side, which is a totally different story.
Well, but the point is I didn't spend five mana on it. So I just played a 2/3 blocker, if you want to think of it that way. If I attack and hit them and cast Flicker of Fate, I'm going to get the card for my Flicker of Fate back, assuming it doesn't die. Let's say I'm playing a red deck. I'm going to at least draw a card at the end of my turn. I'm going to at least know one of the cards or both. Even early in that game, maybe you want to find lands. And now if you're replacing your Flicker of Fate with a card, you have four or five cards in hand. So you spent two cards to get at least one back, and you have a 5/5 or 6/6 that's threatening to draw, let's say on average, you know, half a card at the end of each turn. That's quite powerful against black, red. They don't have good removal for what you're doing.
They do have removal for Haka. I mean, at least Fatal Push.
Black does, that is correct.
But yeah, if you find a window where they're tapped out, but it's like, it still feels like maybe you're jumping through a fair number of hoops to get a pretty medium payoff.
Yeah, it's possible. I'm excited to try it out, but I think it's a card that you'll find out quite quickly where you do your thing and then they very, you know, simply execute what they were going to do anyway, and it beats that, and you're just like, oh, okay, well, that felt terrible.
Yeah. The more Alrind looks like a 7/7 that draws you two cards a turn, certainly the better it is.
So as we pivot to looking at some deck lists here, there are three questions on my mind. Did we account for Alrind in our deck construction? So first, are we playing blink effects to cheat Alrind in faster? And it sounds like, David, you're saying yes, you are interested in doing that. Second, are we going to skew our deck composition to like go heavier on one card type than another? Obviously, lands is probably going to be the biggest card type, but are you going to try to like build a mostly creatures deck or mostly instance deck? And third, like, are you going to go out of your way to play more scry effects? Omen of the Sea, you mentioned. If you're in Modern, Serum Visions, Mystic Sanctuary, Jace the Mind Sculptor, these cards also work very well. You could even go into other colors for things like Corsair, Crucifix, Vivian, Monster's Advocate. These are cards that let you just know the top card of your deck all the time. And from what I gather, you're saying you don't want to like go too far out of your way in that category, but I'm curious to see how your list shaped up with reference to the other 2 points.
Yeah, so let's take a quick look at some shells here. So one of the shells is taking advantage of the card Release to the Wind, which works both with Alrind and Valky. The shells I'm proposing kind of have a core of this sort of blue-black interaction we're used to, which is sort of Thoughtseize, Fatal Push, Opt, and then you have your Alrind and Loki in whatever numbers, and then Jace Friend's Prodigy as another card that kind of helps cycle through your deck. You're casting these cheap instants anyway, so it's going to be card advantage. Also, looting away your extra Alrinds, etc., is worthwhile, or your extra Valkys. And then Release to the Wind has a clause in Pioneer. It's one of the few reasonable cards, and I am using reasonable with scare quotes there, with Valky. So you exile Valky from the game, and you may recast it as the card the side we're interested in, Tybalt. So I have a couple shells here. One is like a Grixis Release the Gods list, and you know it has that same core, and then it's adding a little bit of red. So it's playing 2 Dreadbore, 4 Bonecrusher, A Nicol Bolas, Cletus. I'm trying to keep the legend count relatively high because I'm looking to play maybe at least one Mox Amber in this list. Release the To the Wind is just to add a few more cards for value. So Seagate Stormcaller, Release to the Wind, Bonecrusher Giant actually lets you cast the front half again if you want to shock somebody. If you think of that as a 2-for-1. Nicol Bolas obviously has a come into play ability, although typically you would hate to pay 3 mana for that even at instant speed. Although, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. As a quick refresher, just to say this all in one, Release to the Wind is from Rivals Vixalon, 2 and a blue instant, exile target non-land permanent. For as long as that card remains exiled, its owner may cast it without paying its mana cost.
I think this is going to be a big test for Release of the Wind. I've never seen that card cast before. 3 mana is pretty expensive.
Yeah, it is. It does kind of slot right into your curve, though. If you Thoughtseize turn 1, Valky turn 2, or Haka turn 2, then you Release to the Wind on turn 3, and hopefully you're getting your value. Like I said, if Haka hits, you can Release to the Wind in response to the trigger, so you should get your card back at your end of turn. Obviously, Valky, you're hopefully getting at least a card, probably 2 cards, when you plus it in response to for Release to the Wind resolves. So then another way you can build this is Release to the Wind. In addition to doing those things with the blue-black guys, if you don't want to add red, you can play Lutri the Spell Chaser. Lutri the Spell Chaser with a Release to the Wind on the stack casts itself infinitely. So you Release to the Wind any of your other permanents. You cast a Lutri. You copy Release to the Wind, target Lutri, exile it from the game. Cast Lutri again, it targets the same Release to the Wind, etc., etc. So that sets up a bunch of different triggers that can win the game, and cards you can play that would win the game once you've set up this loop are Slitherwisp, Diligent Excavator, Altar of the Brood, Bantu's Monument, Outpost Siege set on Khans, and there's maybe more I'm not thinking of. But when I saw that Slitherwisp worked, because Lutri is a... is a permanent with flash, I was like, okay, now we're talking. I kind of want to play Slitherwisp and blue blacklist anyway. I'm always trying to sneak it in there. Damon, obviously the only person who's ever 5-0'd a modern league with it. So I like that as sort of a backup plan. We want to maybe have cards like Omen of the Dead, Omen of the Sea anyway. You know, Omen of the Dead finds half of our combo piece, but it's also a card that triggers Slitherwisp. And both of the omens, after they're in play, can be sacked to scry, which adds extra value if you already have Ulrin in play. So I've constructed a sample build of sort of a Dimir Release to the Gods list.
I was trying to follow what you were saying with the Slitherwisp, and like, I believe you, but just in my mind, I'm convinced that you lose life every time you cast a flash spell, even though...
I know, it's not until you see their life go down, you're like, oh yeah, this is even better than I thought.
They lose life, and I drew a card. This card is insane. How is no one else 5-0-ing with this?
Yeah, this deck is breathtaking, David. What a creation.
I think between the two of them, I kind of like the Grixis list better just because I'm a big believer in Bonecrusher Giants. As much as the Lutri line is pretty sweet and cute, that's a 6-mana play and it's kind of tough to execute. And I mean, you can counter for that by only playing 2 Lutris. So I don't know. I think I'd probably start with the Grixis one. And I almost want to consider Chandra Torch of Defiance for that build too, just to have, you know, more ways to hardcast the expensive half of both of your blue gods and your black god.
Yeah, we should point out that there is now the new pathway. So the mana in this deck can be better if you want. I was kind of trying to steer away from double red cards, but it might be possible to play 1 or even 2 Chandras in a list like this because you can maybe maximize the pathway. So there's still some jiggering to be done with the mana base, and we'll have to find out what the best way to do that is, where we want to get our blue and black early, but we still want to maybe have access to double red late, so... All right, and then 2 quick ones here. I have lists that do not have Valky at all. They're really focused on just bouncing Haka into getting our Ulrin. One is sort of an Esper Urien list. It's built on similar lists that are doing reasonably well in the format right now. And it's just basically adding in Ulrin to the lists. I'm adding the card Flicker of Fate because there's a bunch of extra cards we're playing that Flicker of Fate gives you value for. So we have our Thoughtseize Fatal Push, Thraven Inspector, the second best white card in the format is there. 4 Charming Prince. I think Charming Prince is a great card. It bounces the Raven. You don't get the Scry that turn, but you do get Ulrin at that end of turn. And then every future Charming Prince can just Scry 2, so it really helps your Ulrin draws. It's just a fine early play. And we're playing other cards that Charming Prince can bounce for value, so Thraven Inspector. On 3, we have Skyclave Apparition. Again, another great card to... blink with Charming Prince. And then this list is playing two Urien main and one as our little buddy. And although we're used to the superpower of the Angel plus Urien, we kind of have the slow version of that, where Urien and Charming Prince keep blinking each other for this sort of infinite value. Flicker of Fate obviously interacts with the Haka Raven, but it also has Omen of the Sea, Trail of Ambition, Skyclave Apparition, Oath of Kaya, Demonic Pact, Elspeth Conquers Death, and Urien itself to blink in this list. So this is a list that's really focused on sort of value. It's one of those lists that Dan and I often like, where we die, but we've got 8 cards in hand, so it feels like did we really lose? And it's kind of built around a core that's still having some success right now. So I like it as a starting point to try out our Alruns.
Yes, this looks like a lot of fun. Can we fit some Spell Quellers in here? The interaction between Spell Queller and Teferi means that if you Flicker or Fate your Spell Queller, the spell's not coming back.
That is true, but that would be the only instant.
This list is all tap out. So our next list does take advantage of that interaction. So I'm glad you pointed it out, Damon. So our next list is a blue-white Azorius Blink list, and it takes advantage of the fact that Essence Flux bounces Spirits for 1 mana. So that is Spell Queller. That is, again, Skyclave Apparition. And that is Haka Raven, if you like. And then it takes advantage of, again, the Charming Prince interaction, which I think is quite good. And then I'm playing an Escape Protocol, which, if people don't remember, is a 2-mana enchantment. Whenever you cycle a card, you may pay a colorless and blink a creature or artifact you have in play. We don't have any artifacts to blink. We do have a bunch of cards that cycle, though. And so Escape Protocol with like a Teferi and Spell Queller in play just gives you like almost infinite blinks. You just leave mana up every turn. You're blinking out your Spell Queller to, you know, counter whatever, but it also just gives you an early out to maybe blink your Haka Raven. And then you have a bunch of flash interactions. You have Sensor, you have Neutralize, you have Hieroglyphic Illumination. That's a card that cycles for 1, but is also a 4-mana draw 2 in the late game. You have Cast Out, so you've got some removal. But yeah, the interaction that Damon was just describing with a 4 Spell Queller, 4 Teferi Time Raveler is something I was very interested in.
Just a point of clarification. So the Charming Prince interaction, if you Charming Prince during your main phase on the Haka, Alrund will come back at the beginning of your end step, but you will miss that turn's trigger on Alrund. So
yep, correct.
It's really slow to like get the effect. So you're saying that's still worth it just to upgrade your mana, speed up the Alrund essentially.
It's worth it against a list that this list is specifically soft against, which is mono red or Boros. It's difficult for them to kill the Raven on 2, even if they're on the play. They often have to spend 2 spells to do it. The red-white version plays maybe 5 effects or 6 effects that do 3 damage. The mono-red version plays almost no effects that do 3 damage. And then blinking it on turn 2 means you're making like a 4-4 or 5-5, right? You've only spent 2 cards from your hand. So that a 5-5 that is threatening to draw cards is something they have to spend 2 cards on right away. So you're just setting up a very favorable exchange is what I'm saying. Without any card advantage happening, you're probably gaining at least 2 cards on them.
I wonder if you could just kind of combine the sort of Spell Queller part with the Esper list. I feel like you're jumping through a lot of hoops to play a lot of cycling cards for a single Escape Protocol. And, you know, Neutralize is fine. Hieroglyphic Illumination is fine. Cast Out is pretty medium. Sensor is, it's okay.
Yeah, I have the same question. I've noticed that a lot of your Pioneer lists, David, do start with Sensors and some number of Neutralize. So I would say that that's like the cards, the cyclers you get for free. And Hieroglyphic Illumination and Cast Out are ones I don't see you playing as often. So I guess that's the question. Like, did you increase those because of the Escape Protocol? And if so, do you just want to play more of that card?
Yeah, I mean, I think the card that I like the least is probably Cast Out. The value that people get from spending 4 mana and resolving a permanent that Cast Out might exile is actually quite good. The only one it trades with sort of equitably is the green enchantment that untaps all your lands.
Wilderness Reclamation.
Yeah, Wilderness Wreck. So, I mean, maybe cutting a couple cast outs is probably fair. Yeah, playing a second Escape Protocol actually sounds good. I just really like the idea of, like, hardlocking people where you just have a Teferi in play and Escape Protocol and a Spell Queller in play, and they're just stuck. Like, what do you do?
And a Cycler in hand. There's a lot of pieces in this combo.
Yeah, but Teferi draws a card every once in a while, puts Spell Queller back in your hand.
Cyclers draw more Cyclers. What could
go wrong? Exactly. Can't lose.
So these homes all make sense for me, the way you've drawn them up. I noticed you didn't build any decks or you didn't propose any this week that use that sweeper interaction you were talking about. And you also didn't propose any modern lists. Do you think that there's merit to either of those approaches, or are you thinking this is strictly a Pioneer card?
I think the problem is that Haka is just very, very, very mediocre in Modern. It doesn't block anything other than Goblin Guide. If I'm spacing on a card, let me know, but I can't think of anything. It is a Lightning Bolt format, so you have white and red now have one mana cards that can answer it if you try to do any kind of blink shenanigans. And the Alrun side dies to path, so you're not even like escaping a lot of the possibilities in terms of like your payoffs. And I think there's a lot of really efficient cards that pay you off for getting blinked. So, you know, like Wall of Omens, Icefang Quaddle, etc. These are all fine ephemerate targets that just generate value without having to do anything special. And so you don't need to play these other cards. Now, those aren't available in Pioneer, so I think you are getting something special out of the Raven. As far as the sweepers, I don't think sweepers are good. I don't think they're good in Modern. I don't think they're good in Pioneer right now. You'll notice there is no sort of hard control list. Even the like blue blacklist maybe play one sweeper. And the reason for that is because cards that resolve generate so much value, you aren't actually like getting anywhere. The format is like a bunch of super low to the ground decks. Often sometimes your Supreme Verdict is too slow, or you've already taken a ton of damage. Or it's a bunch of mana doublers. So that's Wilderness Wreck, Fires of Invention, the 5-mana Nissa, and the money pile is basically mana doubling when you think about getting your 4 extra land. So it's those engine cards, and sweepers are bad against them, and they're not even that good against the super aggro decks because a lot of times red's just burning you out, and you got your 2-for-1, but at what cost? So
yeah, if all run red, at the beginning of your end step, you may switch your library for 2 lands and put them into play tapped. We talk a little different game in Modern, but it doesn't.
Fair enough. All right, so which of these builds do you guys want to start our testing with?
I like the Esper Blink list the most.
Sneaking in the Spell Quellers?
Yeah, I think there's room for them.
I mean, it's a Urion list. You got to have space to just kind of jam whatever cards you like in there. I'll probably try all of the Pioneer lists in some capacity or another. I maybe won't play the Grixis list if the blue blacklist feels too bad, or vice versa. Whichever one I play first, if the interaction just feels very weak, I won't waste any time on it.
Well, I'll start on the Grixis list because that's my jam right there. Trying out that new pathway, that's what I'm all about. Best card from Call Time. So that's Alrun, God of the Cosmos, and his little raven friend, Haka, the Whispering Raven. We will be back next week with our testing results, and we'll tell you all about it. That brings us to the end of our brew session. Tune in next week for all of our testing results with Alrun, as well as Velky, plus the latest innovations from week one of Call Time in Modern and Pioneer. We would love to get your feedback on this new split format. You can reach us on Twitter at FaithlessMTG. And if you'd like to support the show, you can join our Patreon at patreon.com/faithlessbrewing. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next week.